All right, let's go ahead and start. Thank you again, everyone, for joining. This is the next, if you wish, in a series of town halls regarding the NRIA case. I know many of you participated in earlier calls. The last call was on February 8th, 2023, and that town hall is available. The recording of it is available online. I tried it moments ago to make sure it was working, and you may have to download it, but it does work for recording and listening to that recording. For those who have not participated earlier, my name is Louis DeLucia, and I am from Ice Miller. We are attorneys for the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors in the NRIA case. Also on the phone and video with me is Michael Ott, our colleague in Chicago regarding this case. And I don't know if our other colleagues, but I think that Dan Polacek should be on, but also Allison Fiedler is part of the team, but she is in another hearing. Also on the call are other professionals retained by the committee, which include Alvarez and Marcel, including Andrew Gonzalez, Hamir Vaid, and Bill Waldie, as well as potentially, I don't know if I see them, but Rick Barry and Greg Coleman. So we have the professionals here to answer questions if we can. We have the series of questions that have been submitted from the portal. We appreciate that. Those questions are very helpful. Give us some guidelines in terms of what to anticipate your questions may be. And we have the best possible answers we can give you right now. But the call will cover three or four high-level topics. One will be the plan discussions and where we are, a timeline for those plan discussions and where we anticipate the timing to be for plan emergence, coming out of bankruptcy, restructuring, and getting to distributions, which is all of our goals. Second is we'll be discussing the status of the real estate projects as well as the investigations. And then lastly, we'll give a quick summary of your questions and the K-1 questions that we received and answers to those to the best we can. So with that, let me start with where we are on plan discussions, and we'll roll into the details of the A&M Alvarez investigation and real estate update. So we have been having very, very active discussions with the debtors, meaning their professionals, the company and their professionals, and the board of directors, who are essentially two retired bankruptcy judges and a financial advisor, regarding the structure of a plan for this case and the emergence out of bankruptcy and how the properties will be used, developed, sold so that distributions could be made, and what the structure would be for how those claims of creditors would be treated. And those plans have, that plan discussion has been matured to the point where we had meetings, at least two or three meetings over the last couple of weeks in person in Newark with the principals there, the CRO, counsel to the board. And we've also discussed the terms of a disclosure statement, which would be the document that accompanies the plan for creditors to consider and vote on when they're considering to approve or not approve that plan. That includes all of you. I'll give you the process first and then some a little bit more detail. The process that we anticipate is that within the next couple of weeks, that plan should be filed. In all likelihood, that plan will be filed within the next couple of weeks. It will be accompanied by a disclosure statement, which will be a longer document that summarizes the history of the case, how we got here, what issues we anticipate were confronted during the bankruptcy case, what the plan is, and describes how that plan will be implemented going forward. And it will provide financial background and information. It'll show a liquidation analysis, which is an analysis of how this, if this, these properties were just liquidated, shut down, closed, and sold, what those values would be. It'll show how the plan will anticipate a greater distribution than that amount, than just liquidating. It will identify some areas of litigation that will occur post-confirmation. And it will be a general discussion of the plan. It'll have ballots attached to it. It'll have proposed orders attached to it and other information. We will, once that's filed, we will have specific town halls like this just to walk you through that disclosure statement and plan, to help you understand it, answer questions, so that when you get to the time when you have to vote on it, you're not like, I read this, I need a lawyer, I don't understand. We want to have that those calls with you so that we can go through those, the disclosure statement and plan, so that you understand them. You may not agree with all of it, but you'll have questions or you may have approval, but you'll look through it. Then we'll have a time we can sit down and walk through with you during those calls, during those town halls, so you can have those questions answered. You may need, of course, your own counsel to look at your own individual situation, but at least you'll have our understanding of the structure, how it best serves the maximum distribution for investors and creditors. So that's when, then once those town halls are done, you have the disclosure statement, there'll be a time when you must ballot, vote on that plan. That'll be after that disclosure statement is approved by the court. You'll then have a right to vote, say, I agree, don't agree, I accept, don't accept. The court will then consider all the ballots of all the investors and creditors and will approve or disapprove the plan. Creditors and parties in interest can object to the plan or not. And the court will approve the confirmation of that plan, which is the approval of the plan, and then it gets implemented. What was included as a relatively important part of these discussions with all the various parties in these meetings regarding the plan was corporate structure. What is the structure of the company, meaning the governance of the entity post-confirmation? How will the, meaning after the plan is confirmed and approved, how will the properties be managed? Who will manage the litigation going forward, et cetera? All of that will be incorporated in the disclosure statement and plan and how that would be proposed going forward. We also discussed about, among other fairly complicated legal issues was whether or not these debtors and entities should be treated as a whole, meaning substantively consolidated as one large pot of investments and assets, or individually as to each property and the various fund entities and the NRA entity, and what was the best way to maximize the return to investors in each category, the best possible way. And that was analyzed as well and is going to be built into the plan and structurally should be reviewed by all of you. And the purpose of it, and I think these town halls regarding explaining the plan disclosure statement will be very important. You will have questions. You'll have not understand all of it necessarily if you haven't gone through this before. And we are going to be there to try to help answer those questions regarding the plan. So that's the current status of the plan discussions. We are very close. We have a draft plan. We have redlined the plan, meaning sent comments, exchanged comments, Alvarez has provided comments, and we'll be working with the debtors over the next week or two to get that on file. So look for that soon. So before we get to questions that are in part touch upon that, let's talk about the next step, which is a little bit more granular on the real estate and the investigations. So as to the real estate, there is not an enormous amount to report as an update from the February 8th meeting, which was the last meeting. Nor is there a lot to report in terms of motion practice in the bankruptcy case, because the whole focus has really been on the plan and the related information. So the plan and the disclosure statement and the legal issues surrounding that have been the focus of the professionals since February 8th. But so not a lot of individual focus on motion practice. But I'll turn over now for purposes of the real estate update, the podium to Hamir and to Alvarez to discuss the real estate update now, if you wish.
Great. Thank you, Lewis. Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you can all hear me okay. Great. So as was mentioned, we wanted to cover off the activities happening since the last town hall for real estate. My name is Hamir Ved. I am a part of the real estate advisory team at A&M. In terms of the updates, the first we'd like to let everyone know is that the CRO has provided the UCC, the committee, with their real estate strategy plan, which the UCC is reviewing. In parallel, over the last few months, we have been, A&M has been analyzing the real estate plan, has also come up with our own recommendations to the real estate strategy provided by the CRO. And A&M has provided our report to the USCC as well, which is being reviewed and analyzed. So that's the update on the occurrence on the real estate strategy, which was discussed during the last town hall meeting. I would like to mention that there is a docket number out there, which is docket 1938. For the purposes of the audience in this call, if you'd like to reference that docket, you will have the ability to look at all the units in that docket and properties that are held for sale, the status of each property in terms of the development, as well as potentially potential conditions of construction, as well as the associated costs that are expected to occur as part of construction completion for those units and properties. The next piece I'd like to discuss is sales, and I think this will cover one of the questions. So, Lewis, apologies, I'm jumping ahead. We are expecting, based on the condominiums and individual townhomes held for sale, between January of 2023 and April of 2023, approximately $23 million of expected net sale proceeds, of which $13.7 million have been realized by ways of closings to date between January and now, and those have been through a few units that will also be available to see in that docket that we provided 1938. As it relates to unit 3 in Brooklyn for 494, which was one of the questions, I'll cover that off now. I just wanted to let folks know that there was a structural concern with the roof and the surrounding fencing of the roof of that property. And because these are condominiums, I know the question was, why is this unit delayed versus the other two that sold earlier? Those two units did not have an allocation issue of the structural roofing and fencing concern. This unit did, which has now been remediated based on our last discussion with the debtors. And Corcoran Marketing Group, which is a broker firm retained to market this property, is actively marketing the asset. And I think it is a $1.4 million net sale proceed expected pursuant to the completion of this sale. So from a real estate standpoint, those were the few high points I wanted to cover, and happy to take any questions afterwards as well. So Lewis, back to you.
Thank you, Hamir, very much. So, as you can see, they are doing the ongoing sales. It was part of a sale motion, procedures motion that was approved by the court a number of weeks ago, where they were able to sell units individually to have this cash flow without having to go back to court for each unit, which saved a lot of money in terms of procedure. But we can now turn it over to Alvarez and Marcel's investigation, Bill Waldy. But before we do, I can tell you that from the legal side, before Bill takes over, there are really three high level issues we're looking at now. One is, we're continuing to work with Alvarez, Bill, and the team and others regarding US construction. And we anticipate depositions in the next month within April. They were gonna be in March, but they filed another motion to quash. We're fighting that regarding their discovery, but we are teed up for dates of deposition of Dustin Salzano and Tom and John Farina regarding discovery in that case. And we also are looking at the secured lender S3, which has liens on two of the principal properties in the case between $29 and $30+ million. We're looking at those liens, the validity and enforceability of them, to assess whether or not they can provide some sort of recovery. And lastly, we're monitoring the DOJ and SEC actions, all of which are relatively stagnant. Salzano is, as I understand it, is been released on bail, but is otherwise under supervision. And but the DOJ and SEC actions are, the SEC action stayed, but the DOJ is proceeding. But I'm sorry, go ahead, Bill, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Lewis. Yeah, as far as the investigation goes, we are working closely with Ice Miller and various attorneys as they have split up assignments based on the particular targets involved. And this involves a lot of different work streams, which is document review, financial records, bank and QuickBooks records that we continue to go through, requisitions, emails, correspondence, HUD-1s, and so forth, looking for outliers, fraud, red flags, of which we are identifying numerous issues and following up on those. But what we're doing is we're strategically targeting where we feel the deep pocket returns will come. So not just looking at something to look at it, but actually have a purpose behind it, where we think we get the best recovery for you. And what is that? That is, like we explained last time, is the certain buckets. So we are looking, and I know one of the questions was about third parties, what we're doing about third parties to go after third parties. And that is a big focus of what we're doing. Financial institutions being one of them, as being a deep pocket and what their role was. And we're finding really good evidence regarding certain financial institutions and whether or not there was knowledge of the fraud, what they could have done to stop it, were they aiding and abetting? And we're compiling that information, be it through correspondence we're finding, through the records we're seeing. And this is just now through, you know, what we've gotten through the government, the 5.8 million documents that we're sifting through in NexPoint, hard drives that have come in, subpoenaed records, and there's still a lot of subpoena records out there that we're waiting on to come in, but you know, there's over 100 subpoenas out there. So as they come in, we dig in. So that financial analysis is ongoing, and not just financial institutions, professionals, and what did they know? Accountants, lawyers, so forth, the media, promoters, the feeder funds, contractors, certain insiders. And then how were these funds diverted? Where did they go? And there's a lot of layering and tracing that comes into play here, but that's the way we have been focusing now. So the bottom line is where we can get the best recovery. We're also working hand in hand with ICE regarding providing sworn declarations, helping them respond to motions that are coming up, and any other research that's needed to help them in the deposition prep and so forth. We do that on an ad hoc basis as things go on and prioritize it. That's a high level overview of the investigation. It's a lot of information, a lot of people, but we have, you know, a systematic approach that we're keeping this very efficient and focusing our resources on where we feel we'll get the best bang for the buck. I'll turn it back to you now, Lewis.
Thanks, Bill. So that is the investigation. I mean, obviously there's a great deal of detail and granularity behind Bill's report and Hamir's report, a lot of which is embedded in some of the filings. If you take a look at the docket on these properties and on that budget that was referred to by Hamir, but also in the investigation piece, clearly we're not going to publicly discuss the granular details of some of this investigation. But if you do want to see some of the color behind what is being discovered at various levels, take a look at the filings in connection with U.S. Construction's motion to quash. You will see responses by us that are very detailed, provide examples of information that show claims going against those folks and others, and gives you a sense of the depth of which this has been tracked and investigated. So, these investigations will really become much more visible as the litigations begin, which are more likely after the plan is filed and or approved, because the focus is getting the real estate stabilized, up for sale, moving forward, which is now occurring, and the plan filed so that we can start the process of emerging from bankruptcy and focusing then on the litigation. We do not anticipate, as we said on the last call, I believe, that the real estate will make anyone whole on their investments. The real estate is short on the amount and value to make anyone whole. There will have to be a substantial shortfall made up by litigation recoveries against the bad actors, and that's why the investigation is important. So that's where we are. Let's now turn to the questions that people have. We've answered some in the comments section, but we'll go through the ones submitted by the portal first. Excuse me. One is, what has occurred since our last town hall for creditors to progress this case toward a full resolution? I believe we just described that the best we could in terms of that update as to what has occurred since then, focusing on the plan, continuing the investigation, identifying and making sure that the real estate is stable and moving forward. Why would we need a K-1 tax report if NRIA reported no income to the investors? I'm not a tax person. I can't answer that question. excuse me. I would suggest two things. One is, if you email info@nria.net, they do have a standard response they give you on information regarding when and if and how they're giving K-1s. But also, they're also, I believe, not going to be doing or issuing K-1s for 2022 until September. And the reason for that is, delaying getting it done and needing to get it done by them. We don't do this. We are not part of this, nor is Alvarez. The debtors are in full control of the K-1s, and they've advised that they will not be released until September. Did the bank see this claims against third parties? Did the banks see this coming? Fox TV ran disclaimers on those great commercials. Will my wife and I get something back? One of the major principal areas of focus for us in the investigation, as it is for Alvarez, are those who are promoting, selling, who sold, promoted, facilitated the sales of these securities. It's certainly not just Fox. It's any number. There's any number of other parties who were paid for promoting in advertising the sales of these securities. And they are being looked at for the commencement of an action for recoveries. And so that is not at all off the table, and we are looking at that. With reference to schedule, I don't understand this one. I have to skip it because it doesn't have a full sentence. The next one is real estate. Why is it taking so long regarding 494 7th number 3? I think Hamir has already answered that one. Date of restoring normal distributions. As I mentioned in the past, there are no normal distributions that will be coming going forward. What you will receive going forward after the plan is confirmed, when distributions are available from cash, are distributions in bulk. You won't be getting monthly distributions. It'll be distributions pursuant to the plan. That would be from recoveries, sales of units, sales of buildings, and recoveries from litigation recoveries that will go into the trust, and then the trust will make distributions to investors based upon their claims. And that will be happening after the plan is confirmed. The timing of that is uncertain because A, we have to get through confirmation. B, we have to create the trust, which will happen very soon after the plan is confirmed, then fund the trust and then have those sales and get that going. So how soon that is, we don't know, but it is a focus. Excuse me. Will NRIA be continued or liquidated? Essentially, on a short-term basis, in order to maximize the real estate, in order to get the most value for certain of the properties, and you'll see it in the plan, certain properties will be completed. So there will be some operations in terms of completing the properties. An example being the Bergenline property that will be developed and or then sold for a greater value than we could maximize now out of a current value. Some properties will be just sold, essentially like a liquidation. NRIA as an entity will not continue in the sense of it will be out there buying and selling real estate and soliciting investors. That won't be happening. What's going to be happening is the existing real estate will be maximized, liquidated, and distributed to investors with recoveries from litigation also going to the trust and then distributed to investors as well. So that's the game plan for the company going forward. Has a definitive assessment of assets been made and a plan approved for disbursement of the assets to investors? And the answer is yes, there has been an assessment of the assets, meaning hard assets. Certainly litigation is difficult. You can't you can't definitively say what that litigation recovery will be until you get into it, you litigate, and you see what the claims are, the defenses are. But in terms of hard assets, examples being real estate, physical assets, and cash, certainly that's been assessed and valued. That will all be in the disclosure statement. There will be an analysis and statement of those values in the disclosure statement. And in terms of a plan, that's the plan I've been talking about. It has not been approved, and it won't be approved until you all see it and work through it. So that's not going to happen yet. And as I mentioned, it'll be through the plan process that you will see it, get to vote on it, and opine on it. So that's the status of that. I'm just making sure I have all questions because I saw that one other question came in. Bear with me. All right, let's see. I'll keep going, but I think Michael, there's one question that was added at the end of the day earlier, right before this call. I just don't have it in front of me. It was bolded in your last summary, but I don't have it. Maybe you can find it, Mike, and address it. But what is the status of the plan to avert? Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say the question was, has the amount of assets been calculated? And as there have been appraisals undertaken, the values, you know, depend on a lot of variables in terms of timing, in terms of the ability to find funding or financing to complete construction costs and whatnot, the ability to find partners. So it's a rather complicated, it's not a straightforward question of, you know, exactly how much it's going to be. But there have been some projections out, and we expect that those will be made public at the time that the disclosure statement is distributed to everybody in connection with the plan.
Thanks, Mike. That's right. So the next question is, when will the company submit the proposed settlement? I think that's referring to the plan. Again, that is the same time frame we've been talking about, which is in the next few weeks. Method to calculate claims. There will be a process within, there will be a, let me take a step back. The debtor has, and the debtor has shared with the financial advisors to the committee, as well as us, what they understand to be the face value of the investments by all the investors, meaning the principal amount of the investments. There will be in the plan a method by which people can participate, and this is what we're contemplating. It's not approved by the court yet or anything else, but we're contemplating a process by which creditors can elect to agree to a number. That number would be agreed to. It would avoid litigation. It would avoid clawback issues, and that number would be agreed to, and a distribution would be based on that claim. It would also avoid protracted time of claim review and analysis and claim, what they call reconciliation, because there's in excess of 5,000 claims filed, but there are less than 2,000 investors, or roughly 2,000 investors. There's more than $4 billion in claims filed when there are far less than that in terms of investors, because there are duplicate claims. The claims reconciliation process is a long and expensive process. Because of having done any number of these in terms of the professionals in this case, of these mass tort fraud cases, we have found historically that the amount of money of the professionals and time and delay to investors getting their money of going through that claims reconciliation process is often extraordinarily burdensome to everybody, especially the investors who would be delayed in getting their money until that reconciliation is done. So there is within the plan a contemplated process that would currently allow investors to agree to a number that would bypass all of that and get to a more prompt resolution of their claim, an allowed amount, and then hopefully everyone could focus on making distributions as opposed to calculating those claims. But you'll see it, we'll discuss it in detail, as I said, in those town halls after the disclosure statement is filed, and you'll have a chance to review that. Next question is, will we have individual meetings to verify the validity of our claims? There will not be individual meetings, but there will be individual amounts for your claims identified. If you don't agree with them, there will be a process by which you can object. You can have a discussion about that with the professionals, probably jointly with the committee and the debtors. That will be a resolution of that number. If it becomes to the point where this can't be an agreement, then that's when the claims can go to the court for approval, and it will be resolved by the court. Is the disclosure statement of restructuring available? I mentioned about this and I described that question. The next question, the basis of five NRA reinvestments was the CEO's unconditional written guarantees. Will the dollar amounts for claim setting purposes be honored? I'm not sure I fully understand that, but the guarantees were considered as part or are being considered. Whether or not they are given any greater value or any dollar value is a different issue. The investments are the face amount of the investments, and the dollar amount of the investments are being recognized within the plan. Will unsecured creditors in NRIA PP fund receive their absolutely and unconditionally guaranteed 12% annualized preferred return? Obviously, right now, the plan is not approved by the court. So what I'm saying about the plan is not binding on anyone yet, nor approved by the court or even by our committee yet. These are just in the draft discussions of a draft plan to be filed. But it is not contemplated right now because the company was run as a Ponzi scheme and that the returns that were promised were from other investors' money and that the company never generated a 12% guaranteed return, that those guaranteed returns would not be honored in a sense of a guaranteed return to investors. That is certainly something that is being analyzed, will be addressed within the plan and in the disclosure statement, and we will explain the approach when it's filed to everyone and address questions as they arise. So those are all the questions. Let's take a look in the
just to add one point to that last issue about the 12% annualized return and the fact that this was run as a Ponzi scheme. A Ponzi scheme is basically when you use the funds of future investors in order to pay off past investors. So if, for example, we were to honor some sort of arbitrary 12% return or 21% return, what we would be doing is we would be preferring the earlier investors at the expense of the later investors, which would be in effect, you know, implementing the Ponzi scheme for the bankruptcy case, which is not something we want to do, which is not something we believe is just or even enforceable. So I understand that everybody is looking at that 12% return as something that was guaranteed to them, but if there are not enough assets to pay everybody's capital back, then there's not gonna be enough assets to pay everybody's return back either. So that's kind of where we're at.
All right, so thanks. Let me answer some questions. Here's a question on the side. My question was ballot votes versus court to approve. Can you explain the way that will work? E.g., if not enough ballot votes to approve the plan, will the court decide? It's a little bit more complicated than that. There's a provision of the bankruptcy code that deals with this, 1129, and it essentially addresses how ballots are calculated and how the court will approve it. I'll try to be at 30,000 feet to give you a description. The court really is meant, as any court, to decide what is legal, not legal, you know, fouls and strikes. They're not here to override the interests of the creditors or the investors if they comply with the law. So what do I mean by that? The plan will have various classes of creditors and investors. They will be treated in accordance with the bankruptcy code's absolute priority rule and the bank and other laws. The court will look at the ballots, and what will be filed before the court approves the plan is called a ballot summary. And that ballot summary will say each class and how they voted. So if there are 100 creditors making up a number in the unsecured creditor class and 1,000 investors, all the ballots for those investors will be calculated or be listed, I approve, don't approve, in that for that class of the investors, and then a separate, you know, summary for the class of the unsecured creditors. Because every creditor in this case, every class of creditors in this case that we're aware of, most, I may be, you know, speaking a little bit informally, but 99% of those who count will be what are called impaired. Impaired meaning you're not getting a check at confirmation for the full amount of your claim. We wish that was the case, but unfortunately that's not the case. But if because that's not the case, you're impaired. Your rights are affected. That's what that means. Under the bankruptcy code, at least one of those classes that's impaired, so that it means the unsecured creditors or the investor creditors, one of those classes has to approve the plan in order for the plan to be confirmed or approved by the court. The way a class approves it is that of all the people that voted in that class, 51% in number and 2/3 in amount of the creditors in that class voted to approve the plan. So if 2/3 of the number of investors that vote and 51% of, in amount, I meant, and 51% in number of those investors vote in favor, then that class will have carried and voted in favor as an impaired class in favor of the plan. If all the other elements of 1129, which are more than 13, are approved by the court, that has to do with all these different technical elements, then the court will approve the plan. So it's not as just, you know, the voting. It is largely the voting. So if there's no impaired class voting in favor of the plan, it's not confirmable. So that's how this will work. It's a little complicated, but that's the rough idea of the answer. Okay, sorry. Okay, what happens to the realized funds, $13.5 million from the condo and townhome sales? And at the beginning of the case, and I believe it's pretty much not all of them, but most of these, a great bulk of these funds, early on in the case, actually right before the committee was formed, we obtained an order that froze the sales of certain assets and placed them in escrow. Some of those funds from the proceeds of these condos and townhome sales, some of them are in escrow, preserved and not dispersed because of the fact that they came from certain properties, et cetera, and that the funds had not been fully traced yet. So that order is still in place. Some of the condo sales went into, go into the general fund of the debtors and are held by the debtors. My question was, I already did that one. Let me see. What is percentage shortfall and recovery of the funds from the real estates? We cannot discuss that yet until the disclosure statement is filed, because we don't want to share, you know, information that that is not sent to all investors at the same time. So this information will be available in the disclosure statement and plan. But you will see it soon.
There's a question. What will be the process of evaluating claims? Many have been duplicated or overstated. How will all of these be reconciled and a final total number assessed? So typically in a bankruptcy case, after the plan is confirmed, the committee or the liquidation trustee council will basically do an analysis of all the claims and file what are called omnibus claim objections, which is basically a claim objection to a whole bunch of claims all at once for various reasons. And so what they will do is they will identify all of the duplicate claims or all of the amended claims, anything that appears on the claim register more than once, and they will go through and file an objection to those just to clean up the docket. And they will include both the claim to be objected to and the claim that'll survive, so you know what you'll be left with if they object to one of your duplicate claims. And so that will be filed. There'll be a period of time during which, if your claim is affected and you think they did something wrong, you will have a chance to contact them and try and work it out. But if you don't reach out to them, there's no objection, the order will likely be granted, and that will clean up the claims register. That's also a similar process to how claims are objected to generally, but that's how they are cleaned up specifically.
Right. Another question is, can I go over the timeline again? And I'll do that real quickly. Basically, we anticipate and we've been working on redlining, revising, and fixing the plan and disclosure statement. Over the next couple of weeks, we anticipate that being completed and filed. That will start the period within which the disclosure statement must be circulated and approved by the bankruptcy court. That's a minimum of a 28-day period under Bankruptcy Rule 2002. So that'll be a period. It'll be longer than that because that's the minimum, and usually the court likes mailing an opportunity, particularly when you have thousands of investors, to make sure they have an opportunity to see it and read it and understand it. So we'll have a period of time after that is filed by which you'll all see it. and it will be set for a hearing. And, you know, my experience suggests about 45 days after it's filed. In that period, like I mentioned, there will be an opportunity for us to go through the town halls and explain for you those the disclosure statement and the plan and what it means, so that you can understand better what its implications are and how you should interpret some of those provisions, because it may be cryptic, it may be why did we do this way and what's the reason. We'll have to explain it. So that's the disclosure statement. Then what, let's assume 45 days go by, the court, there are objections, somebody says the basis for a disclosure statement is that it must provide adequate information by which a reasonable investor would be able to determine, you know, what their rights are and what the claims are. So that's basically what it does. And assuming the court hears objections, resolves them, and approves it, then that disclosure statement, along with the plan and forms of a ballot, is sent to all investors and creditors and parties in interest so that they can put in their ballot and say, I approve, don't approve, agree, don't agree to the plan and its provisions. During that period, the solicitation period, it's called, you know, between when the disclosure is approved and the hearing on that, there's about another, that gap period is about another 45 days or more. Okay, so now we're at 90 days from when we file it. So we're at least 90 days out. Disclosure, then now the confirmation hearing is processed, is scheduled, and you have a hearing on approving the plan. Does it meet the requirements of the bankruptcy code? Does it meet the requirements of other applicable law? Did it meet the requirements of approval by that impaired class of creditors I talked about, if there are impairment, and here there are impaired creditors? So is there a class that votes in favor, et cetera? If it's approved, assuming the plan is then approved, an order of confirmation is entered, a trustee or other party afterwards is approved, and the plan is implemented, where post-bankruptcy, now you get out of bankruptcy and the entity goes on, either a trust or an LLC, goes on and manages the property and the entities and the litigation for the benefit of all the beneficiaries of that trust, which are largely the investors who participate in the plan. So, and creditors who participate in the plan. So that's the time frame. So you're looking at this summer, realistically, for this to start being implemented. But it takes this time to get the court process through. So
And keep in mind that while we are working through the plan process, we are also working in parallel with the debtors on the real estate projects. The real estate is being developed as expeditiously as possible. Decisions have been made or are being made to be put in front of you as to what to do with them. We are also doing all the investigations we would do after a confirmation into claims that the estate may have. So it's not like everything is at a standstill while we're waiting for the plan to be confirmed. We're moving full steam ahead on every front in order to make sure that everything is ready to go when the plan is ready to go. That doesn't mean there'll necessarily be a distribution right after the plan is confirmed. You know, there's a lot of different factors in terms of that. One thing is that before we can make any sort of interim distribution, we need to resolve enough of the claims, allow enough of the claims that, you know, we can afford to reserve sufficient funds to pay the claims if they're allowed. And, you know, there are 5 billion in claims on the register right now. So we'll need to, you know, clean that up before we can make any sort of interim distribution. But, you know, we're working as expeditiously as possible on the plan, and we will get there as soon as we can. The next question I see is, I'll take this one. What is the total amount of dollars owed to investors on this call? Well, I can't narrow it down to the 132 participants on this call, subtracting out the counsel and professionals. But in terms of the total principal investments that were made or received by NRIA in its various, you know, facets, there were around $650 million of investments made in NRIA, and around $100 million of assets returned by NRIA, a cash return to investors, which leaves around $550 million of investments outstanding, just in terms of principal amount. So that gives you an idea of where things are if you look at the principal investments that have not been returned. There are not a huge amount of unsecured claims. There are not a huge amount of secured claims. A secured claim is an income mortgage on real estate. An unsecured claim would be trade debt, you know, paying off construction, you know, vendors or you know, masons or whatnot. But that's where things are in terms of what the debtor's books and records show in terms of the investments and the claims. Obviously, there are $5 billion of claims filed. You know, there's some reconciliation that will be involved there, but we think that at the end of the day, it'll arrive near where the books and records are, because the debtors have spent a great deal of time since the bad guys were, you know, kicked out effectively, trying to reconstruct those books and records and make sure that they have an accurate record of what the investments were and what was returned and what actual cash came in.
Right. And next question is, so if we don't get 51%, what happens? That is, it depends. The 51% in number is for each class. Obviously, the overwhelming interested parties in this case are you, the investors in this company. So, you know, we obviously want to be able to get to a point where 51% or more of the investors approve the plan. That would be ideal. If you don't have an impaired class voting in favor and you can't get to a plan, then obviously, the only other option is conversion, which is converting the case to Chapter 7 liquidation, which is not what anyone wants. In reality, what likely would happen is a plan would have to be amended or tweaked so that eventually the creditors would support it. But I don't anticipate not getting to 51%.
And keep in mind, it's 51% of voting creditors. So anyone who abstains would not count either way towards that number. So there are roughly 2,000 investors, and if only 500 of them vote, you only need 251 votes in favor. You don't need 1,000 votes in favor of the 2,000 investors. It depends on how many people actually vote.
Right. Next is, what is the current status of NRIA Finance? How much money they have now versus how much money they're receiving? I think the best way to answer that question is take a look at the budget that was referred to earlier. And I think that would probably, I think it's docket number 1938, if I'm not mistaken. It's the budget that's on the docket, and it's referenced in the answers here too, as the current status. Also, every single one of the debtors, in fact, just recently, in the last few days, filed a monthly operating report. That monthly operating report gives you exactly the answers to your question, what the monthly expenses and revenue were for each of those debtors, every single one of them. So if you pull them up and you look up monthly operating report, or if you go on Omni right now and just look at the current most recent filings on Omni right now, every one of the most recent docket entries is their monthly operating report. They file 130 plus of them. So you'll see them all there, and you can look at each debtor you want and see the revenue, income, et cetera, of each one. On joint venture agreements, that is individual. That is really, really something you should take a look at the plan and disclosure statement to see how that's going to be treated. There's been a substantial amount of analysis that went into those. There are various kinds of joint venture agreements. So without knowing which joint venture agreement you have, it's difficult to answer this question. But there are essentially three kinds. One is what we call the dollar joint ventures, where for a dollar, you receive a certain joint venture interest plus your investment in the fund. There are secured lender joint ventures where purportedly, and I say purportedly, the debtor was allegedly giving you a lien on certain property. A debtor was giving you a lien on certain property. For that joint venture. And thirdly are what we call on title joint ventures, which is yet a third type of joint venture agreement, each of which have various rights that in some ways also structurally are subordinated, meaning lower in priority, believe it or not, based upon the language of those documents, to other investments. So I can't answer this question specifically. You should look to your own counsel regarding each joint venture agreement to see where you fall.
Next question I see is, are you clawing back any money from partners fund that was used to pay older investors? So we've had a lot of discussions as to how and to what extent we should pursue clawback actions. Under the bankruptcy code, there are various means by which a debtor or a trustee may seek repayment of funds that were paid out to investors in either the 90 days or up to 4 years effectively before the bankruptcy case was filed. The committee is working with the debtors to reach an agreement as to what is the most economical and equitable means to either pursue or not pursue those claims. And we will be announcing something, I would imagine, when the plan is presented as to where we've arrived and how we propose to deal with those.
Right. Do we need to submit a claims withdrawal even if Omni submitted multiple claims, or Omni agents will do it by themselves? I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I think that if you have filed multiple or duplicate claims, that'll be weeded out in the claims reconciliation process. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'm not going to give anybody specific legal advice, but if you filed multiple claims, it's like a hypothetical person who filed three claims because they had a changing understanding of the facts. That will be, as Lewis said, weeded out through the claim objection process, where they will object to duplicate claims. If you seek to withdraw a claim, something might be done by mistake or whatnot. I would just avoid going to the time of expense of seeking to withdraw a claim. The debtors will object, or the committee or whatever, whoever the successor entity is after the plan is confirmed, will object to duplicate claims, and will work out the correct amount that is owed. Withdrawing claims is probably just going to potentially confuse things.
Right. Do we have to wait for all investigations to be complete before we start receiving recovery from litigation? Not necessarily. Obviously, that'll be the trustee's decision. Trustee meaning the person appointed post plan to manage the entity going forward. That, and what I mean by entity is the entity just in dissolution. To answer the second question in combination with this, the next question in combination with this, NRIA, the entity, will not necessarily come out of bankruptcy. The assets and all rights that NRA owns will move out of bankruptcy. NRIA, the entity, will remain as a shell and not be dissolved, but we will dealt with in the bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy will later be closed. But it will not be emerging as NRIA, operating as NRIA and investing in assets. That will not be occurring. But you don't have to wait to wait for all investigations. We have identified certain claims that one may call low-hanging fruit that may result in more prompt resolutions because they're so blatant and the cash is sitting there. And we are anticipating bringing those actions that will enable us to get some recoveries. Those recoveries, we hope, would come in sooner than other investigations and other litigations, and therefore provide a fund that the trustee may be able to make later distributions out of. So not all litigations have to be concluded before you get distributions from those.
Is NRIA coming out of Chapter 11? Well, eventually they will come out of Chapter 11. We are hopeful.
I just answered that, Mike.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you answer since distributions of funds were returned? Since the distribution of funds were designated returns of capital, are all valid claims the result of invested amount minus all funds received by each creditor? That is one method for calculating claims that is under discussion. It is a valid method for calculating the amount of principal outstanding for each investor. And we'll have more to report once the plan has been filed, and the disclosure statement will lay out exactly how the debtor intends to calculate claims.
All right. Okay. So let me answer two other questions. One is Art Scaturo, and then I'll talk about the consolidated finance report. I'll do the consolidated finance report first. The budget has that consolidated information. It is a consolidated budget, cash on hand, expenses going forward by each debtor and even by each property. So take a look at the budget. That's what I meant by that. If you wanted granularity, you can go to the granularity. So I think that is a way to get your combined consolidated information. As to Art Scaturo, we understand that he's been charged with the same as only a singular charge, as I recall, and he's pled guilty in connection with the securities fraud. That's it. But he is certainly going to face repercussions for that. We don't know whether or not he, because the government doesn't tell you, we don't know if he is collaborating with the government. It's possible, but we don't know. What is the fee structure for all paid professionals in this case, i.e. attorneys, accountants? What percentage of the recovered funds will be further depleted? Well, obviously, no one works for free, just like I'm sure you don't. I'm sure you don't go to work and like to be, you know, go to work and not be paid. So we go to work, we get paid, and the hourly rates are on the fee statements as well as the fee applications for retention. It is simply hourly. It is not a contingency. We don't get 30% of your money that comes in. We just get an hourly rate. That is often a way of litigation cases can be handled through a contingency, but we have found that often those contingency cases can rapidly take 30% of the recovery versus an hourly, which might be far less. Even though it's a cash burn now, it's far less of a recovery. But the fee arrangements right now are all set forth in the court orders as well as in the retention applications and fee applications, but it's an hourly rate. So that's the structure on that. As new questions come, I apologize.
So there were duplicate claim numbers being generated by the Omni system. How will that be handled, assuming the claims number is the unique reference number being used to tally claims? I was not aware of that, but I will reach out to Omni to see how that is resolved. It might be that the claims numbers are unique with respect to each debtor, but that's just me speculating. But we will work out. But we will work with Omni to make sure that that isn't an issue.
As it stands now, what percentage of money do you think one can receive? 20%, 40%, 60%? Until the disclosure statement is approved, we are not going to be, or at least file, not going to be discussing these numbers, only because we really shouldn't. So we will do so once that, and you will see a number, a percentage, a rough percentage within the disclosure statement, and you will see how that's calculated and where it comes from. Any upside will definitely be beyond the real estate. It'll be in the litigation recoveries. NRA already has more than 100 million on the side. Can we get on the side? Does that mean cash on hand? It doesn't really have 100 million, more than 100 million cash on hand. It does not. Same with AJ Scaturo. AJ Scaturo as I understand, has not been charged with anything yet in terms of criminality. But just so you understand, the criminal aspects of what's going on are totally separate from this. They're done by the federal government and or the state government. We don't have any involvement in that. We are chasing every one of these individuals personally. We have subpoenaed them. We've been working with their attorneys to get information from them. And all of them are subject to the investigation and possible litigation. So that has been work. That has been a high level target for us for a long time.
Will investors in a specific property get paid from proceeds of that property only, or will the proceeds get pooled for all investors? That is a topic that has been a subject of a lot of discussion between the debtors and the committee. And I can't give you an answer today, but that'll be laid out very clearly in the disclosure statement once it is filed.
How would we get an estimate of the percentage back if there's still money to recover? The percentage that would exist in the document will be from the real estate and cash on hand and the forecasted budget, right? So let's assume a property takes from now till 2023, 2024, 2025 to complete. Another one takes to 2023, end of the year to complete. Some are ready to sell right now. And there are budgets for each of those, right? So, for example, it's going to cost X amount to get that property developed. We anticipate a market value of Y. That analysis has been done. It's not to be done. We've told you that in the past. It's being done. It's done. And that analysis tells us what that rough recovery will be from those real estate parcels and real estate developments. And that's the number that you'd get in this. The upside, the recovery to make whole. If you were made whole from the real estate, no one would have to be sued, right? Because you're getting paid in full. But obviously, you're not going to get paid in full from the real estate. So what do we have to do? We have to go after the people who damaged you by not making you whole. And that's what this litigation will do. How much will be recovered from that? We are working on ideas of what would be recoverable, but we are still in the nascent phase of part of some of those claims. The bigger claims, the claims relating to potential RICO, those who aided and abetted, entities like accounting firms, banks, all of whom are under our subpoenas. We've issued more than 80 subpoenas to these various entities and individuals. We've obtained millions of documents that are being reviewed and scoured through artificial intelligence and other programming to scour and study these documents for information that will provide and leads into litigation. We've identified large buckets of potential recovery, individuals who received and entities who received or closely affiliated with these entities, where they're one-man shops or one-person shops who received, you know, $30 million. So these are targets. And the benefit of the bankruptcy code, and you're asking, why haven't you sued already? Well, the answer is the bankruptcy code, unlike any other forum, allows us to investigate, bring subpoenas even before a lawsuit is brought. In any other civil litigation, you don't get subpoena power and the ability to bring people and compel them to testify or bring documents until you sue them. And you don't know your claims. And they can say, well, I'm not going to answer that because that's beyond the scope of the litigation, et cetera. With 2004 exams, which is what we're doing, called Bankruptcy Rule 2004 exams, we can take their deposition. We can ask for all the documents relating to NRIA at all and then say, aha, we found this, we found that. And they can't avoid that. We've already been to court several times fighting it, and the judge has been receptive to our arguments on the 2004s, and we anticipate pursuing those claimants. So that's where we are on that.
Next question, how will the plan and disclosure statement be transmitted electronically? I may be traveling and sending it through the mail may be problematic. Same questions with regard to submitting ballots. So the plan will be filed on the docket. And so if you're receiving docket updates, you will receive it that way. There should also be a mailing, so it should be mailed. If you are part of a WhatsApp group or something else, I'm sure when the plan is submitted, those will blow up, but that's, I can't say for certain. And these, in terms of submitting ballots, I believe my expectation is that the ballots should be submitted, will be submitted through a portal on the Omni website that would allow you to log in with your, to your claim and you know, make whatever elections or votes you want to make with respect to your ballot. So it'll be done online. And I don't believe there may be an option to submit via the mail, but I'm not certain. I believe most of the ballots will be submitted online.
What is your position on the class actions? Oh, let me answer the first question, then I'll go to the next. When will rough estimate be known? 1, 2 months, 6 months? If you're referring to the litigation, I mean, the real estate, we just told you that that estimate is there. The other estimate would be, you know, several months out. So I can't tell you for sure what that number would be.
If you're asking about, you know, we've said a lot of information will be set forth in the disclosure statement, including the estimates of recoveries that will be set forth in the disclosure statement. If you're asking when we expect the disclosure statement to be filed, I would anticipate within the next month, hopefully even sooner than that.
Next couple of weeks, I said.
Next couple of weeks. You shouldn't have to wait too much longer. And I would very much hope before the next town hall that that'll all be filed in public. And that's what we will be discussing on the next town hall, I would hope.
Right. What is your position on the class action suits? The class action suit, we understand, and I was given authority to say it, is we understand that the federal government will be seeking to stay the class action. They haven't done so yet, that I'm aware of, but they will be seeking to stay the class action. I think that the class action is narrow. It is seeking recovery against individuals who largely parked the bulk of their assets in third parties' hands, transferred, and is not as broad as what we anticipate bringing. But you know, everybody has a right to do what they want. It's a private cause of action against discrete individuals who are the same individuals that in part we'll be chasing, but by no means who we believe are the largest targets. The largest targets will probably be the aiders and abettors, those third parties who benefited from the transfers, the family members who are all recipients of the bulk of these funds, and any number of other third parties. We have identified more than 300 individuals and entities connected to these various parties who are all under our microscope. Nowhere near as narrow as the class action right now, as we understand it. Let's see, next question. Do you contemplate continuing? We're gonna have to end, I'm sorry, in about 5:15 p.m. Eastern, so bear with us. Do you contemplate continuing income production via rental income? And if so, how far? Any and all rental income as the properties are stabilized and prior to sale. So some prop, I believe, I'm not 100% positive. If Andrea is still on, she can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe at least one, maybe two properties, they may contemplate some revenue within their budget of rental income as they stabilize, they call stabilize the property, and then it will be sold. The idea is not to hold properties for long-term for rental income, but to sell them. But having a an income-producing property will generate greater value theoretically within the market. So the idea is that some property may generate revenue, but that's all within the budget that is on the docket now, but also to be filed as part of the plan.
I did post the Omni website in the chat. I don't know if you'll be able to find it or not, though. But if you go onto Google and just Google NRIA Omni, O-M-N-I, bankruptcy docket, that should pull up the NRIA website, which should, you know, which will have all the information you need. That's where you can find proofs of claim. That's where you can find the information about the town hall. But if you don't already have that website, that's probably the easiest way to find it. The ongoing expenses, payroll, and otherwise are being controlled by the CRO, I presume. Yes.
I think that's it. I don't understand. The next one. One of the questions is, what is my understanding?
Outstanding
principal outstanding. If it closed prior transactions with individual properties and then transferred over the principal, I don't know how we can answer that.
Well,
question.
Okay. So if. I think you might be referring to a roll-up transaction, which is if you had an investment at one of the property level entities and you rolled it up into the fund. You know, that is something we've been discussing. There were approximately $49 million in principal investments that were rolled into the fund. And as part of that, there were some other calculations that the debtors gave as an incentive to roll into the fund. We've had extensive discussions regarding how to treat those. And that'll all be discussed in great detail in the disclosure statement. But we are aware of those transactions.
Right. I wasn't sure if they're referring to, but I don't know how you, we don't know your principal outstanding.
Yeah, I can't answer about your claim specifically, but yeah.
Right. All right. I think the 360 Main under contract for sale of property, question mark. Andrea, are you on? Is Andrea still on? Andrea Gonzalez?
I am still on, yes.
Okay, so 360 Main. I know Hamir has been addressing this. Is that under contract?
So they are under contract, but that's a project, that's a property that NRA does not currently own. So they're still negotiating the terms and deciding whether they're going to assume the contract and move forward with that. So it's still kind of a TBD at this point in time.
Yeah, I just looked at the chart myself. That's right. The chart of the real estate does suggest that's the condition. So, yep. Not determined yet what's going to happen with that property. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for your time. Hopefully, we answered. It looks like we answered all the questions as well on the side. So in the Q&A, so we appreciate it. Hopefully, that was informative. Look out for filings in the next few weeks. We look forward to talking again in April when we will probably be discussing the plan. It will be a big document. Don't be surprised by it. You know, probably like that thick. Don't be intimidated. We'll try to walk through it with you as well. So come back. We'll see you in April and we'll walk through everything we can. So thank you all very much.